Well, we're going back to the book of Ecclesiastes this morning, and next week I think I will wrap up this series. Developing a God-focused life, and this week we're talking about trusting the justice of God. Now, just let me say that I'm aware that this projector has been giving us some trouble last week. I know there was a little flickering off and on the screen here. I didn't see it because it's behind me. But if it becomes too much of a distraction, I guess let's just shut it down. We had enough distractions during the service to deal with without a flickering screen behind us. I can live without it, but we'll see how it goes. Looks good on the monitor that I'm looking at. So, well, this is the first Sunday of the new year. And we know that the new year is always a time in which we look back and we look ahead. In fact, the month of January is a two-faced month. It's named after the mythological Roman god Janus, J-A-N-U-S, a god who had two faces. One face was used to look behind him, and another face was used to look forward, where he was going. Sometimes I think it'd be nice to have that. You could see what's going on behind you and who's creeping up behind you without running into something else while you're walking ahead. That'd be pretty good. But then you'd have two faces to shave, and the one behind you might be a little more of a challenge than the one in front of you. But typically, the end of January is when we do the looking back and reflecting, and then January is when we're looking ahead and we're thinking about our resolutions that we're going to keep maybe for 4 weeks and then throw them aside. But the book of Ecclesiastes, as we have already observed, is a journal, really, of King Solomon. It's a sermon, too, but it's in the form of a journal where he has done a lot of reflecting on life, on past as well as the present, and he thinks of the future too. He's mostly looking at his own life and the experiences that he had and the mistakes that he made, but also what he observes about life in general. And everything he says doesn't always paint a very positive picture. He gives kind of a gloomy perspective on life many times as he talks about how futile life is and how absurd it can be and how empty life can be. But the reason that his life didn't look so well is that it didn't end as well as it started. Now, Solomon, we know, actually wrote three books in the Old Testament. The first one is the Song of Solomon, which is a book of romance. He wrote that while he was a young man. As a young man, I guess romance was on his mind. And I've never preached through Song of Solomon. Maybe I will my last Sunday that I'm here before I retire. But then at midlife, he wrote the Proverbs, which essentially is a book of rules. But rules kind of sounds like kind of a downer. We probably could look at rules in the sense of being wise principles that will help us keep our life on a straight path, and that's what Proverbs is all about, and there's great wisdom in that book. In fact, I'll be dealing with a series of messages out of Proverbs in the coming weeks. But then in the twilight of his years, he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, and in many ways, this is a book of regrets. It appears that Solomon, at some point in his life, strayed away from the path of righteousness and didn't always follow those wise principles and rules that he outlined in the book of the Proverbs. And he sought fulfillment in every form of pleasure, in every experiment of life under the sun. And that phrase, under the sun, is a recurring phrase throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, and it just simply refers to a life on this earth without God in the equation, living from just a purely human perspective. Now, Solomon, unlike his father David, who spent his reign in warfare, defending his nation as well as himself, Solomon, as we noted last week, reigned during 40 years of peace. And so he had a lot of free time on his hands. Now, he did have a big project of building the temple. David, his father, supplied all of the material for the temple, and Solomon was the one to follow through and get the project done. So that was probably his big crowning accomplishment, but he still had a lot of time on his hands because he didn't have to worry about fighting enemies. And not only that, he had accumulated this gargantuan amount of wealth so that when he reached this point in his life where he sought fulfillment in the pleasures and the attractions of life, well, he had all the time and all the money at his disposal to do anything his little heart desired. But he learned that every experiment, every pleasure that he sought that was outside of the framework of God's intention left him empty and cynical and with regret. But we're learning from Solomon's experience, and that's what he wants us to do. He wants us to learn from his mistakes and his failures. He doesn't want us to repeat those things. And what we're seeking to do as we survey this journal of his is to discover the positive message. It's not just a book about gloom and doom and that everything in life is futile and empty. There are good things that we can look at, and there's encouragement and there's hope that we find here. And the only way we can do that is with God as our shepherd and our guide. And so the key verse, I think, is in verse or chapter 2, that is, verse 25, verse we looked at last week, where Solomon said, "For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him?" Well, the answer to that question is no one can. No one can find enjoyment without him. And so as we're focusing on this theme here of developing a God-focused life, one of the elements that factors into a God-focused life is this matter of trusting the justice of God. And Solomon gives us some motivation for that. What we're going to discover in the verses that we'll look at here is the fact that every person will give an account to God for the deeds they have done. Now, we're not just meaning to give this to you as a threat, or as you better shape up or else. Now, there probably is an aspect to that that maybe we do need to heed at times. But we're looking at this from the positive perspective as a way of encouragement to us as we consider the many things that Solomon is going to talk about. Because he ends his whole journal here at chapter 12, in the last two verses, and we've read these verses almost every time we've looked at this book, but we want to know for sure that all of the negative things that Solomon talks about points to a positive message for us. And so as Solomon says at chapter 12, verse 13, the conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. So there is an accountability that every person will face. Now it's interesting because what Solomon says in verse 14 is exactly what the Apostle Paul described in his letter in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 at verse 10. You don't need to turn there. I will just read some of these verses for you for the sake of time. But here's where the Apostle Paul said, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." Sounds a lot like what Solomon had to say. The only difference is what Paul is talking about here in 2 Corinthians 5 verse 10 applies only to believers, to true born-again Christians. As we stand before this particular judgment that is just for us, which is an evaluation of our deeds done in this life. Whether the works that we have accomplished are considered of value or worth, or whether those works were just selfish and worthless. And there's other passages that talk about being those works being burned up in a fire and so on. But it's not an evaluation of our salvation and whether we get into heaven or not. It's just an evaluation of our works. However, there's a different judgment for unbelievers. And we find that in Revelation chapter 20, verse 11. And again, just let me read this for you. This comes at the end of the end of the age, we'll call it, just for sake of simplicity this morning. But John, the apostle, is given this vision, and he says at verse 11, "Then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small," that is, the important people and the unknown people, "all standing before the throne, and the books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books according to their deeds. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and the death and Hades," or the grave, "gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every one according to their deeds. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire." This is the second death, the lake of fire. "And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." Now, that's a pretty grim description, but that's a judgment, again, that is for unbelievers, strictly. So when Solomon talks about the fact that God will bring every act to judgment, everything hidden, whether good or evil, he's just looking at judgment in general. But as we learn more in the New Testament, these judgments kind of have a way of being more particular to certain people. But everybody faces a judgment. Now, in this journal then, as Solomon writes, he makes observations in life about injustice and oppression. And it's not very pretty. But everything he talks about is totally accurate. Now, back in chapter 3, now, I'm going to be bouncing around throughout the book here of Ecclesiastes, but I'm following a theme rather than a word-for-word, verse-by-verse exposition. But at verse 16, he says, "Furthermore, I have seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, and in the place of righteousness there is wickedness." Well, it sounds like Solomon sees a lot of what we see today too. This is stuff that every generation observes. Injustice and oppression. Many of you are familiar with the name Simon Wiesenthal, a Jewish man who suffered through and witnessed such terrible atrocities on his fellow Jews in Nazi concentration camps during World War II. And he described some horrible things that he experienced and things he witnessed. And after the war, and he survived, he spent his lifetime bringing many of those German men to justice. But in one of his books, he shares one particular startling event. He said one of the German commanders came into the camp, and he took two emaciated Jewish men, put them back to back, handcuffed their arms together so they were tightly back to back. He put a gun in the mouth of one man and pulled the trigger, and the bullet, of course, pierced his skull and went into the skull of the man behind him. But he said, then the commander turned to his officers and said, "See, I showed you how you can save ammunition by killing two men with one bullet." And Wiesenthal said when he saw that happen and when he heard those words, that was kind of a defining moment where his faith in God was shattered. He thought, how could a good God allow such inhumane atrocities to occur? Later on, he wrote one of his more famous quotes, God must have been on leave during the Holocaust. You know, if I had been in Simon Wiesenthal's shoes at that time, with no knowledge of God and His plan and His promises, His purposes, I probably would have come to the same conclusion. Because all of this stuff just defies explanation. And as Solomon looked around at all of the suffering and injustices that he saw in life when he lived on this earth, he made a profound observation that can still be argued today in chapter 8. Now, if you want to go to chapter 8, there are a few verses I'll be looking at back and forth here, so you'll want to just kind of mark that verse, or that chapter, I should say. Now, as I read verse 11, see if you have thought this very same thing different times. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. That's so true. People do bad things and they don't seem to suffer consequences for it. So what do? They take it to the next level. They do worse things. And so many times it seems like God doesn't do anything. Now, we know that if we were to do any of those things, we wouldn't get away with it. But other people, it just seems like they do. And we wonder, where's the promise of God being fulfilled here? When Scripture warns about consequences of sin, but people get away with it. Let's just skip to verse 14 of chapter 8. He says, there's a futility which is done on earth, that is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. On the other hand, there are evil men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I say this too is futility. Now what's he saying here? Well, he seems to be saying that providence gets things backwards. At least that's the way it seems. People do evil things and they're treated like they're doing good things. People do wicked things and they get treated like celebrities. While people who are good people and do good things sometimes get treated like they're evil. So much injustice. This is also reprehensible. But this is the stuff that bothered Solomon so deeply, and it's the stuff that bugs us too. Evil people prosper in their sin, while righteous people suffer in their integrity. People with money have the ability to grease the wheels of the human justice system and make things turn in their favor. While poor people are at the mercy of an already overly burdened justice system. Sometimes it seems as if God has turned a blind eye to so many of the injustices and evils and tragedies in this world. Why is it that a drunk driver slams head-on into an innocent family on the highway and the family gets killed or maimed for life? And the drunk walks away uninjured. Why does cancer strike a good, young, talented person with so much promise in their future while a peddler of pornography lives a long, healthy, and wealthy life? Why do innocent little children suffer tragedy and violence, death? I don't know. I wish I did, but I don't know. I don't know why God allows things to happen. Well, we can try to wax theological or wax philosophical about these things so that we can try to give answers that we think will trouble or ease those troubled minds or grieving hearts, or even perhaps try to satisfy the cynical religious skeptics around us. But the truth is, we aren't given the answers for why every injustice and every bad thing happens in the world. Most of the time, the best thing that we can come up with when people come to us with their grief and their questions is just to say, I don't know any more than you do. I wish I did. But I don't have the mind of God. And furthermore, God is not accountable to me. I'm accountable to Him. And part of my accountability to Him means that I am accountable for how I trust Him in these confusing moments and terrible events. The only thing that will sustain us is our confidence in the justice of God. In chapter 3 at verse 16, couple of verses behind on my slide here. Chapter 3, verse 17, where Solomon said, I said to myself, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man. For a time for every matter and every deed is there. There's a time that will come when God will deal justly in these matters. And so Solomon does have an understanding that both righteous people and wicked people have an accountability. We're accountable for how we trust Him. We're accountable for how we have enjoyed the things He's given us. And wicked people are accountable for their deeds that they do. But sometimes it's so difficult to understand. And so as you go back to chapter 12, those two verses that are sandwiched in between, or chapter 8, rather. You see, I'm not a numbers person. That's why I didn't go into accounting. Back to chapter 8. We already looked at verse 11 and verse 14, but there are two verses sandwiched in between here where Solomon does give some satisfying answer. He says, although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still I know that it will be well for those who fear God, who fear Him openly. But it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like a shadow, because he does not fear God. You see, when we get our eyes off the horizontal and look at the vertical, when we evaluate things not just in terms of this life, but we look at the greater picture and the longer time scale that God has, we know that His justice will be worked out in His appropriate time. Now, there was another man in the Bible, in the Old Testament, who struggled with these very same issues. He wrote Psalm 73. We know him as Asaph, and you're familiar with his problem. He struggled with the same thing. He lamented throughout the start of his psalm that he observed all the good things that happened to wicked people, and he saw their prosperity, and he saw that their death doesn't have any pain, and they have everything they want in life, and they're arrogant, and they're proud, and they boast about everything. And then he says, you know, I lived a good life, and I do that which is right, and yet I suffer, and everything goes wrong. It just doesn't make sense to me. And he says at verse 16, when I pondered to understand this, it was troublesome in my sight. But then he changes at verse 17. Until I came to the sanctuary of God, then I perceived their end. Yeah, they've got it good right now, and I don't understand it. I don't know why there's so much lopsidedness in the justice of this world. But when he came into the sanctuary of God, and I don't know if that was in a literal place that he went to or if it was just a time of solitude with God alone, He got his perspective back. And he knew that what was in this life isn't all there is. That there's an end coming for those who live this way. So life under the sun is a life that is unfair, sometimes cruel. And try as we may, we'll never completely figure it out. Injustice will continue on this side of eternity. And it's all a result of the curse of sin that goes all the way back to Adam. But you know, when Adam sinned and brought sin into the whole human race at that moment, God didn't turn a blind eye to it. He didn't write Adam and all the rest of humanity off as a lost cause. He actually did something about it. Even at that moment in the garden when he came to Adam, his grace and his mercy were already kicked into gear. And he promised that he would provide a way for every individual person who wants it to be redeemed, to be rescued from the curse of sin. And he did it. He followed through with it. In the person of Jesus Christ, the Son, God became a man and entered into this cruel, unjust world. And he took the curse of all of our sin upon himself. He took the punishment. He spilled his own blood, experienced the death for us, so that we could stand in his grace. And that we could one day stand before him guiltless. So life under the sun is life apart from God. Apart from that redeeming grace. And it's a life that will just provide nothing but futility and emptiness and injustice and cruelty. But life in the sun, S-O-N. It's a life of inner contentment and peace. And even though we know that evil men will still exist and atrocities will still continue, God's mercy and grace are still active in individual hearts, bringing new life to one sinner at a time. And our simple responsibility is to fear God and trust him. Trust him to always do that which is right and that which is just in his own time. Because we are only accountable for our own lives and how we've conducted ourselves. We're not accountable for anybody else's life. As someone so appropriately said in the choir of life, it's easy to fake the words. But someday each of us will have to sing solo before God. Instead of looking at that statement as a threat, understand that those are words full of wisdom and full of comfort. Because it's a truth that God wants us to be comforted in. To know that one day he's going to set all injustices right. And all who have done good will be rewarded accordingly. And all who have done evil will be rewarded accordingly. In the meantime,